Hey, Dre.
What's up, Boone?
What's going on? How you feeling? How's the weather treating you? It's a lot warmer outside.
It's summertime right now. I had to turn the AC on.
Yeah? Yeah, AC's definitely on in my crib, too, and I'm not mad. I've got my first mosquito bites of the year.
What?
Yeah, I got a few of those.
Been outside.
Been in the sun, so I got a little sun on me. Appreciate that. What's up? You even don't act like you.
I didn't notice it.
Well, I guess you're just used to me
you're
being
still
brown. You're used to me being brown. I love
you're
that.
You still light-skinned it.
Yeah. You had a real tender moment. Your daughter wanted to come home and visit unexpectedly.
Yeah, she wouldn't really want us to be talking about that. But yeah, she.
No, I'm just saying, like, it's tender. It's sweet.
She's not listening. Yeah, she thought she did. But you know what? She took a minute.
Yeah.
Reflected, assessed, and we're good.
Yeah, I love that.
Like, she grew up a lot in like 4 days.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool to watch.
Yeah.
She's in a good place.
That's good. Mm-hmm. That's good. Speaking of in a good place, recently did a phone call with a young lawyer, successful lawyer. He's a corporate lawyer. He's working for one of the big firms in one of the big cities. And my man's making over $200,000 a year. And hit me up for some financial advice. I'm like, okay, cool. Let's get into it.
Good for him. Sounds like a good prospect.
And I'm going to just give you some of the data.
Until? Mm-hmm.
Contributes 3% to his 401k. 3%.
Okay.
He's 30-something years old, but during his pre-law school period, he's already spent all the money that he had in his 401k from his former life. So he has $0 in retirement savings.
Mm-hmm.
Bunch of credit card debt, personal loans, and
I feel like I know where this is going.
Yeah, like not a homeowner, so rent keeps going up on him. And he hit me up for like financial advice. I'm like, bro, like this is gonna be a tough love session.
Yeah.
Because he's not building any wealth, and I don't think he really understood that. And so we had a tough conversation. I'm like, look, man, you've got to change some priorities. And I even dare to say, you may need to make some more money, you know, whether that be another job or a second job or, you know, it's probably embarrassing to be an attorney working, you know, a part-time job. But I'm saying, like, sometimes you got to do some drastic things. And so,
yeah,
it just brought me to this concept of like, there's a bunch of folks out here making money, but still broke. And they need advice too.
Yep.
Yeah.
But yes, they do, but they can't afford us. So
yeah.
Just tell them what we think.
On the podcast.
That's right.
That's it. And then what's crazy, then I open up my Wall Street Journal this week and I see an article that says Americans with higher incomes are starting to fall behind on payments, which again, it's this idea that there's a bunch of people making money, but still broke. And so today, we're going to just talk to the person who needs to hear this. And it's going to be a little bit of tough love. And also, like, don't blame yourself, because there's some of us who are making money and maybe we're making more than our parents. Like, maybe we didn't have a frame of reference on how to spend or how to manage things.
Some of us are taking care of our parents.
Word.
So.
That too.
For that very reason.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so this week we're going to give some advice for that person who feels like they're still broke, but probably doesn't feel like they should be broke.
Right.
You know, when you get a raise, you feel like, oh, if I could just make this amount, I'll be good.
Do you remember when you got to six figures?
Yeah.
Like that
definitely.
Seemed like.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
But it feels like as soon as I got there, I remember reading a local article or an article in a local paper that said how to struggle on $100,000 a year in New Jersey. Mm. And I was like, oh.
It won't be me.
I was like, what? It's expensive out here.
Mm-hmm. I remember meeting a guy when I was applying to business school, and this guy had, I used to work with him, and he's now working after graduating from his MBA. I knew he was making six figures at the time. And I'm like, yo, man, what's it like? What kind of car are you driving? What kind of, like, tell me about the parties you go to now. He's like, yeah, I drive a Honda Accord. I'm like,
I was going to say a Honda Accord.
An Accord?
Yeah.
Like, bro, where is the Bentley?
I'm pretty sure I had a Honda Accord when I hit six figures.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I had a child already, so.
Heck, I got one. Well, yeah. Not a Honda Accord, but there's a Toyota Camry in the so-called fleet.
I ain't mad at that. Yeah, so we're going to break it down. We're going to give some advice. But we always start with stats and data. So here's one thing I thought was really interesting. The average client going to a credit counseling agency, and the credit counseling folks are the agencies that are nonprofits, and they give advice to folks who are struggling with debt problems, right? So the average client seeking their help today makes about $70,000 a year and has unsecured debt of around $35,000 or half their annual income.
Yeah.
That's a tough spot to be in.
That's a tough spot to be in.
Just 6 years ago, the typical client made about $40,000 a year and had about $10,000 in unsecured debt. We don't even really talk about that debt versus income ratio. We talk about it maybe in terms of your monthly payments.
Yes.
But we never really talk about it in terms of your annual income.
I mean, 25% sounds a lot more manageable than 50%, but it's still a lot.
Yeah, it's like the income threshold is getting higher, mm-hmm. like the people who have problems, and the debts they're managing are significantly higher. There's another report that shows that, this is from the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, U.S. household debt in some form of delinquency, any kind of debt in your house, some mm-hmm. form of delinquency is now up to 4.8% of all households.
Mm-hmm.
So 5% of us struggling with some sort of delinquency. And then if we go into the specific categories, we're seeing mortgage delinquencies, and this is across the board. These are loans that are more than 30 days late.
Yep.
4% of mortgages today, 30 days late. 6% of auto loans. 9% of credit card loans. And 16% of student loans, mm-hmm. all more than 30 days delinquent.
Yeah.
Additionally, if we hone in on those mortgages, 13% of people who are in FHA mortgages, and these are mortgages that typically go to first-time home buyers. Like my first mortgage was FHA. Was yours?
Yep.
FHA?
Absolutely. Lower down payment.
Yeah, lower down payment. I put down 2.25%, I think. What'd you put down? What's yours?
I don't remember.
Yeah.
It was so long ago.
Yeah. It's a good loan.
I mean.
It's a good loan.
It's not a flex, but I bought a home at like 23, 24.
Yeah.
But I bought a home from my mom.
You know, I did the exact same thing.
I purchased my mother's home. Yeah.
Yeah. I did the exact same thing at about the same age. I was 23 or 24 when mm-hmm. I bought my house from my parents.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But that's a real mortgage. Like, it ain't like you bought it for the low low.
It is a real mortgage. And I had a roommate.
Yeah.
So we split the utilities.
Yeah.
And I looked at it as rent, but I was the owner. But yeah.
I had a roommate. I called her my wife at the time.
I was going to say.
It was crazy. It prompted me, like, when I wanted to buy that house, I knew I couldn't afford it. I was like, you know what? Maybe I should get married.
Oh my gosh.
I know that sounds messed up. And it's been 20 plus years since then, but whatever. All right.
Well, my next roommate was my husband. So, yeah.
He'd hate to be described that way.
I mean, that's what it was.
Yeah. I got you. All right. Keep going. So, this is another article in the journal. I'm not sure if you saw this one, Andrea. 1 in 7 people, about 14%, who signed up for the Affordable Care Act for health insurance. This is what they used to call Obamacare. They call it Obamacare when they hate it.
Right.
They call it the Affordable Care Act when they like it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's it.
So 1 in 7 people have stopped paying their health insurance premiums this year.
Well, the cost went up so much.
Yeah.
The government didn't let the subsidies continue.
Yeah,
I should say allowed them to expire.
Yeah, the government is attacking this plan. I mean, they
want it to fail because they want to.
Yeah. A bunch of things for people to stop enrolling. The less people that enroll, the more the prices are going to be.
Yeah.
They took away the subsidies and the people that are leaving are the young, healthy people, which then makes everything more expensive. This is what's going on.
Yep.
Blue Cross Blue Shield of Arizona is saying that they lost over 30% of their ACA, Affordable Care Act, patients, or what do you call them? Enrollees? Insureds?
I want to say participants.
Participants?
That's because I'm always thinking retirement plans, but people.
And right now in America, the average low-cost plan on the marketplace is $556 a month, which is like high, but it ain't crazy.
Yeah.
High, but not crazy. I mean, a family plan could cost, you know, triple that.
Yep.
And that's without any subsidies. If you're lower income, then you might get a subsidy.
I feel it.
Yeah. Your health insurance is through your husband's job, though, right?
It is, but I see the net. I see what the direct deposit is, and it's less because of the premiums have gone up.
I'm on the board of a charter school, and we are flipping out with the health costs. Like, it's becoming like a major, major thing, the health insurance costs. It is expected that ACA enrollment this year is going to drop by 25%, as much as 25%. That's crazy. A lot of people.
Unfortunately, I believe it.
Yeah, it's not like people are just going to get their insurance from elsewhere. They're just not going to have insurance.
Yeah.
Consumer confidence is dropping. In April, we had the lowest consumer confidence reading in the history of the survey. And that's interesting because that's like one of those data points that is counterintuitive as investors. Like typically that is a buying signal as much as it's, you know, a bad situation to be in when consumers are not confident. But
yeah, and we're only halfway through the month, so
yeah,
how's it gonna be at the end?
Yeah, folks are worried about inflation. They're worried about all these different costs, the cumulative impact.
Wonder why.
Man, the war made it worse too.
I'm saying.
Yeah. And speaking of economic data, like at the same time, we're hearing that everything is great, right? We just had a jobs number last month, which was like a really strong number. Consumer spending.
We added jobs, right?
Yeah, added jobs. Yeah.
Allegedly.
Consumer spending rose 2.7% last year. Unemployment rate is below 5%. Like, these data points look good, but like, jokers are out here struggling. Even some high income earners.
That's right.
Let's go into these six-figure people for a moment. Would you believe, Andrea, that up to 51% of Americans who earn over $100,000 per year admit to living paycheck to paycheck?
Yes, I would.
Not only that, there's 15% that say not only are they living paycheck to paycheck, but they're also struggling to pay their monthly bills, housing, utilities, insurance, the basic stuff.
I also believe that.
Now here's a stat about credit card debt. And it's again for folks who make over $100,000 a year. About 38% of people making over $100,000 a year are carrying a balance from 1 month to the next on their credit card, as opposed to paying it off in full the way we tell you to do, which, you know, we know it's hard to do. Like, I'll tell you.
It's hard to do.
The last.
You got it.
I told you I started using Amex a couple months ago.
Yeah.
Brother was good for 2 months.
That balance doing Brother's full.
I'm carrying a balance this month.
Yeah.
Carrying it last month. 13% of high income earners admit that their current debt is basically them spending to maintain a certain lifestyle. Trying to keep up with their wealthy friends, trying to make it look like they got it. Final stat. Final stat. I'm giving you all the stats today, Dre.
All the stats.
You here for it?
I'm here for it.
Okay. High income earners are twice as likely to say that travel and luxury dining are the main cause of their credit card debt, as opposed to those who make under $50,000 a year.
Interesting.
Yeah. And think about
I'm down with one, but not both.
But
I meal prep this week.
Good for you. But that's where a lot of those rewards points are, rewards miles and extra double bonus points and all that on your credit card. It's travel and it's dining.
It's a trap.
Yeah.
The lifestyle trap.
So
we already talked about.
Yeah.
Which I didn't have to say because we already talked about it.
No, it's all good. It's all good. So some of this is like advice for your younger self too, isn't it, Dre? Like,
oh, for sure.
Young Dre.
if I really understood, I mean, really understood, like I understood, but like, you know, you understand something factually, but you don't really apply it.
Yeah.
That's a game changer right there.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's like,
I'd be wealthy.
Yeah. Part of it is like, I think mentally you get to a point where you've been used to living on less for so long. It's like a mirage in front of you. Like when I get to that blessed day,
then I'll be able to.
And 100,000 feels like a million in your head.
Mm-hmm. Look what I did. Look what I accomplished. Look what I got to.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like if I was like before business school, I was making $50,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking if I can make 100 or 120, that's like more than double.
It's double.
That means I should be able to eat twice as much, go on twice the vacations, like house should be twice as big. Like you kind of just naturally think everything should be double.
Yes.
And it's not. Because
at all.
Your taxes go up.
Like I was having a conversation with one of our younger employees and, you know, that lottery theme song, If I Had $1 Million. It's kind of like at this point, $1 Million doesn't even really change my life that much.
Mm.
That's bananas.
Go ahead and slide that million over here there, Jason.
I'm just saying.
Slide that million on over here.
I'm not saying it wouldn't have an impact, but I'm saying like I'm not going to stop working.
Yeah.
I'm not going to all of a sudden buy a luxury vehicle that.
Oh, you already have a luxury
vehicle. I'm saying, you didn't let me finish. I'm not going to go buy a luxury vehicle that doesn't fit my lifestyle.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
I'm
not going to buy a Bentley.
Okay.
Okay. Maybe one.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? Like, it's not going to change my life in a way that I'm going to stop working or I'm going to. It's just not the same as 20 years ago.
That's a fact. That's a fact. I kind of sometimes think that people who make more money but are not financially prepared and responsible end up in worse financial predicaments than when they didn't make the money.
For absolute sure.
Yeah. Because even something like credit, like if your credit is good, they're giving you access to more money. Like this Amex that I got, and I'm not flexing, but like they I don't even see a limit on my statement anymore.
Right.
I'm a no-limit soldier now. So I'm saying no limit.
Oh, just wait.
No limit just means like, yo, I'm playing with fire.
Yeah.
Like I could end up in major trouble now.
Yeah. They will quickly, I've been in this situation in the past where it's due in full for Amex, but they will give you pay over time features for certain expenses, travel, lodging, whatever. If you hit a little hiccup in there, they'll be like, oh, we're going to reduce your preset spending limit. He's like, and you're like, wait, I had one? Like, I didn't know I had one. Like, why are you doing this?
Yeah.
Sometimes it could be an indication that there's something that's not really yours on your credit report, but I've had to explain that. I've been through that at least twice where they're like, we're going to lower your limit. And I'm like, but you're lowering my limit below where I am right now. Like, so I'm automatically like over, like, what are you doing?
Mm.
And it's like, hey, I'm getting reimbursed for something that was really big. Like, I'm not like out here overspending like crazy.
I predict by the end of the year, I'll be back to just using my debit card again. Because what's funny about
you got to know yourself. And you got to know what works for you.
Yeah. The funny thing about these points, I'm like terrified to use them. I've got a bunch of points. I started using this Amex and I'm like, oh, okay, I'm going to try to take advantage of these points. But then when there's time for me to spend the points, I'm like, oh, I don't want to waste my points.
Right. Yeah, I'm going to save them and let them accumulate for something big. Right?
And then
is that the mindset?
I guess. I don't know.
Use your points.
I don't know what the formula is to you. Like, what's a good deal on points versus what's not a good deal?
It's definitely not all it's cracked up to be. It's definitely not a dollar per point. But when I was rocking with Amazon, I would often use my Amex points for Amazon purchases.
Yeah, I got you.
And on occasion when I still do that, I still do that.
So bottom line is like making a lot of money is not the same thing as having wealth. Very, very different.
We'll talk about that more when we come back from break.
Yeah, there's a bunch of people, like half the people we talked about, they're literally 1 week away from a crisis, like one layoff away from a crisis.
Yeah.
things that are keeping people, high-income folks, broke. I mean, housing is keeping folks broke. Non-essential spending is keeping folks broke. Invisible expenses that go along with having high income. Like, that's here's right. one thing that actually, this stepped on my toes. Mm-hmm. You know, like, when you, like, are rolling with folks who make good money and then somebody gets married, mm-hmm. they're not having, like, a wedding that you feel like dropping a $50 check off to. Or right. at a destination where you could just wear something out the closet.
Right, yeah.
Right? You might feel compelled, like, to go get the high-end gym membership or to, you know, pay extra for the Uber to get the Uber Black instead of the regular John.
I've seen it happen.
Your kids might be in private school. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. you might be...
And you're paying for extra stuff.
Yeah, it's like the extra stuff that comes along with it. Mm-hmm. And so, being wealthy is about having assets that are working for you. Being a high income earner is just the beginning of that.
Yeah, that's money you work for.
So we'll go to break to your point, Dre. We'll go to break. We'll come back and we'll get into this still broke conversation.
I'm Andrea Gray.
I'm Alan Boomer.
We are the Momentum Advisors.
And we're back. Still broke out here.
Speak for yourself. We're still talking about high earners who feel like they're broke, but yeah. just don't have a lot.
Mm-hmm. And how not to feel like that anymore.
How not to feel like that anymore. I will say this. I alluded to it before the break, but someone described it to me like this. Income is money that you work for. Mm-hmm. Wealth is when your money works for you.
Preach.
That's the difference.
Yeah.
And we're not all going to be able to work forever.
Mm-hmm. And what people don't really, like, that's a cool thing to say, but, like, what it really looks like mm-hmm. is your money making money. Like, ask yourself annually. Literally. And you can see it on your tax return. You can see it on your net worth statement. How much money did my money make last year? Right. It should be like a little contest. I mm-hmm. made X, my money made Y.
And I like that approach.
I look forward to the day when my money makes more money than I made for myself. Like, that's a day that I think can come. That's certainly true for a lot of our clients.
Yep.
Where they're earning more from their investments than they did from work in that particular year.
Absolutely.
And it could be true for you. So let's get into this. So let's just say on budgeting, we know we've done whole shows on budgeting. There's people that know way more about budgeting than Andrea and Alan. But like one little mental rule of thumb is that 50-30-20 budget. And it's the idea that 50% of your money from one month to the next should be allocated to the essential items like housing, utilities, groceries. And I'll even throw the car into that 50% bucket. Because like in a lot of places, you really need a car.
You need at least one vehicle. Yeah. Some households too.
So, you know, if I make $10,000 a month net of taxes and my rent or mortgage is $4,500.
You maxed out.
Yeah, I'm close. Yeah. Like I cannot afford to go get a $700 car note. Even though when I show up at the car dealership, they're more than happy to give me that car.
Of course.
Like, we've got to have this mental math in our head of 50% max for those essentials like housing, utilities. Groceries are in there too, my G.
Groceries are expensive.
Yeah.
And one thing I'm going to do is eat.
Yeah.
What I want.
And then 30% for those wants, those discretionary items, your restaurants, your Netflix and chill. Budget, entertainment, vacations,
hobbies, subscriptions.
Yeah. And 20% needs to be saved because we didn't even throw tithes. Where do you put tithes in the needs or in the wants? Where do you put your tithes? Five and five?
Sure.
Okay.
Yes.
Tithes is important.
I mean, it absolutely is. And so to me, if you're going to use this framework, and there's something that doesn't quite work, then you have to figure out, what am I reducing somewhere else? Like, facts. Literally, where is the money coming from? Which bucket am I pulling from to do this thing?
Well.
Which one?
Yeah.
So maybe my wants are 25%
instead of 30%.
And I'm not recommending this, but maybe my savings is 15 instead of 20.
Or I could counter with, maybe your needs are at 45 instead of 50.
Also true. Just saying, it's got to come from somewhere.
Yeah. I would give you a high five right now if I could reach you. I feel you on that.
That, I mean, that's just what it is.
Yeah. Yeah, we have this argument in the company a lot. Like, an expense will come up and Joker's be like, yeah.
Let's do it.
I'm like, man, we're right. What money? Like, you got
that's
McDonald's money?
Question. I'm like, so is this coming out of the regular budget? Yeah. Or are the partners going in on our equitable share?
You see what
or
I'm saying?
Or do we maybe wait on this?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, hey.
Or keep looking.
Like, just because you're making good money now doesn't mean that you don't need to have that same conversation. Like, our company makes good money, by the way. And we still have that conversation of whether we need to pay for this now or can we afford to wait.
This is
it a want or a need?
I love percentages, because you can't have a pizza slice that's not included in the pie already.
Mm-hmm.
Like, your slice of the pizza has to come from the box. From this pie. There's no borrowing from another pie.
Yeah. That's it.
So either you get some skinnier slices.
Mm-hmm.
You cut that pie up into, what, instead of 8 slices?
Yeah, 16.
16 or whatever. I'm just saying.
Yeah. Got to make it stretch. Back in the day, what'd you do to make your food stretch when you were making a little bit less money? What were your tactics? I'll give you a couple. I definitely put milk into eggs. I would do that. I'd do one egg and a little bit of milk.
Oh,
stretch it out a little bit.
Didn't think about that.
Yeah.
Eat
breakfast for dinner a couple times.
Breakfast for dinner is
a good
one.
That was a good stretcher.
Yeah, that's a great stretcher.
Spaghetti. That was my growing up.
Yeah.
My mom's way of stretching the money, the budget.
No, breakfast for dinner is low key the best.
Yeah.
Especially if, like, in my household, my husband and children love breakfast food. Mm-hmm. So it was like, there was no stretch.
Yeah.
It was the stretch flex.
Yeah.
So it's like, guess what?
And you know what? You get an extra piece of bacon. Don't even worry about that. Don't even worry about
it. And it was quick. I liked it too, because breakfast is quick.
Yeah.
I'm good at a good potluck. Like, let's just pull everything out that's in the freezer.
Okay.
And see what we're working with and make up stuff.
I like that.
You can do it. Stir fry can be whatever you want.
That's
soups
true.
Soups and stews can be whatever.
Now, what
you
if
want.
It was nasty the first time?
No, we're not doing that. We're not doing that. There's always usually a pasta or a protein involved.
Yeah.
Or I am one of those people that when I go grocery shopping, I'm buying cans of stuff. Just
I'm real good at, like,
just because
turning the old chicken into a stew. Like, I'm really good at that.
Every time.
That's
you
a good stretch.
You can do a lot with chicken.
Yeah. Old steak into a beef stew.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All of it.
Other advice for the high income earner who is still broke. Avoid these high monthly payments. Like, we talked earlier about the budget, the 50, 30, 20 and all that. But you got to realize that, like, these high monthly payments are really fixed expenses that are just hard to cut if you need to start trimming the budget.
Yeah.
So, like, when it comes to, like, renting an apartment or leasing a vehicle, like, be mindful about that. Like, be real stingy on those fixed monthly costs, because those are things that are hard to, like, do anything about
down
the road.
You can't negotiate those down.
Yeah.
Down the road.
And then also, like, a lot of those things have high maintenance, like a high cost home or apartment or vehicle.
Yep.
Something goes wrong, it's going to be high cost replacement, repair.
You know how long my battery light's been on?
Oh, gosh. On your vehicle?
I've been through the whole winter, because I already know it's going to be $700. But I'm like, the car's still running.
Yeah.
Nah, it's really more of a time thing. But
a friend of mine who shall remain.
I want this luxury vehicle anyway. I just bought it because it was the best deal.
A friend of mine who shall remain nameless had been, until I had to give them a really hard time, had been driving around with a little device to jumpstart the battery. Like, and was doing it almost every day.
Was jumping the battery every day?
Yes, from a little device.
I'm not at that point.
Yeah. Don't be like that.
I'm not like that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the maintenance, though, of these things.
I mean, yeah, it's expensive.
Like, I got this, you know, beautiful car after I crashed my other car. And, like, now I'm like, man, I have to buy tires soon. Like, these tires are not cheap.
Exactly. Exactly.
Not cheap. Next, let's think about your free cash. I know we always tell you 3 to 12 months worth of cash set aside for emergencies, and that is true. But let's think about how you hold that cash.
Yes. Makes a difference. Really, you don't want to keep more than 1 to 2 months of expenses in your checking account.
Yeah.
Because you're not earning interest on that while you're waiting to spend it, right? So if you move the rest of your emergency fund to a high yield savings account or a money market fund, you're going to earn more interest on it.
Mm-hmm. And then,
and honestly, you're not even going to be as tempted to spend it because you're not looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm one of those. How frequently do you check your balances?
Wait,
in your checking account.
All right. When I was using my debit card every day, like I was supposed to up until a few months ago,
mm-hmm.
I would just check it when I felt like it was probably getting low. The end of the month.
Wow.
I was checking it.
I'm in that joint every day.
Yeah.
Not because I'm checking the balance so much, but it's kind of like I want to stay on top of money that's moving that I might have forgotten about.
Yeah.
I want to stay on top of, did something I pay for, did it clear? Did it post money coming in? I also share accounts or can view my children's accounts. So sometimes I'm low-key stalking them to see how they're spending their money. You know, just...
Yeah.
But I feel like I'm in there every day, not always for the purpose of checking the balance, but
checking transactions and
checking,
all types of
stuff. Because like
you'll get fraud otherwise. That's a good tactic. I'm more of an ostrich. I can't lie. Like, I will bury my head in the sand and then look up when I think there's a problem. And that's not a good way to do it.
No, I also set up alerts from my bank to, there's certain transaction volume amounts that I want to know. Like, mm-hmm. tell me if more than $500 leaves their bank.
Yeah.
For something other, bill pay doesn't count, but like, or if more than that is coming in and it's not payroll, right? I also tell my bank to text me my balance every Friday.
Yeah. Okay.
And people might be like, why Friday? Because I think I'm at risk for spending more money on a weekend.
I love that.
So I just want to know going into the weekend where I'm at so I don't do something crazy.
Yeah, and I'd also add, so there's the high yield savings account, which today is probably getting you about 4%,
mm-hmm.
maybe somewhere in there.
Maybe high threes even.
Yeah, I mean, high threes probably mm-hmm. more likely. And then there's the brokerage account. Like, again, this is the account that is just like a savings account, except you can buy stocks with it. And that's where I put the majority of my emergency savings.
Yeah.
And if I run into a cash flow crunch, I borrow against it because I know I can repay it in a couple months when I get paid again.
Yep.
Hold off on making big expensive purchases, especially the ones in the wants bucket.
Absolutely.
Gucci bags. The
not happening.
6-inch heels from the luxury designer.
Listen, I'm shopping my closet right now.
Yeah. That's
my husband
a good.
Was like, when'd you get that?
Yeah.
I was like, a couple years ago.
Mm.
So I'm going to tell all my business right now.
Okay.
The only thing that's wrong with this dress I'm wearing is that there's a little band that covers
this
the button.
Exact dress you're wearing
this
right
exact
now.
Dress.
Okay.
It's, see this? It's popped.
I didn't notice that.
Of course.
Yeah.
You wouldn't know it because it's behind me. My hair is long enough now that
I thought you had
it.
On a new dress.
And I'm just like,
I was like, okay, Dre.
I need to just go get a little elastic thing. So I haven't worn it in public.
Yeah.
But I'm like, I like it. It fits. It works.
It looks smooth
to
me.
You know? I'm like,
hey.
I don't need to go out and buy a new dress.
Mm-hmm.
I probably will anyway, but I'm just saying I don't have to.
After this show, I want you to give my wife a call and just tell her that.
Oh, there are times where I'm just like, I'm buying all the new things. Yeah. I don't even care.
You know how often I hear I have nothing to wear? I'm like, bruh. Like,
yeah.
I hear I have nothing to wear right after hearing we have too much stuff in this house. Like, which one is it?
I understand that.
Yeah.
Two things can be true at the same time.
So imagine having this rule in your life. If it's a non-essential purchase and it costs more than $500 that you require yourself to wait at least 72 hours before buying it.
72?
At least.
Okay.
What do you think? Longer? Shorter? 3 weeks?
I'm a quick decision maker, so I get the pause.
Yeah.
But I'm like, 24 to 48 hours should be enough. But
then make it 72.
It just depends. It depends on how knee-jerk.
Yeah. Here's my issue with big purchases, to be honest. Like, sometimes I buy them when it's just convenient. Like, I just bought a new phone this week, and I'm at the Apple store waiting for my phone to upload and, you know, recharge, whatever it has to do. And I'm, like, looking around, and I'm like, oh.
Bought a MacBook.
Buy this, buy that. Because I have the time to do it right now, but, like, it would have been better if I did the research and, like, you know.
What'd you buy?
Just a bunch of, like, expensive little knickknacks. I bought the home speaker. I bought this fancy charging thing from my phone. I bought
from the Apple store.
My wife one, and I bought my son a tripod for his phone, and I bought myself a travel tripod.
Wow.
I probably dropped the extra like $600-$700 that I didn't have to spend.
Did you also purchase a few shares of Apple stock?
I'm a shareholder.
Yeah.
And I'll buy some more.
If I'm gonna do that, I justify it by saying, you know what? Let me go ahead and pick up a few shares.
That's thinking like a wealthy person.
I'm just saying. That's thinking wealthy. If I'm going to do it,
yeah.
If I'm going to do it, and I just did it.
Yeah.
The freshman just got a new MacBook.
Mm-hmm.
And is already hitting us up for a new phone, but she's probably going to need one. And I'm just like,
That's a good little challenge to yourself.
If I'm going to drop it, I'm going to invest in it.
All right. So how about this? If you're going to make an expensive purchase, buy the same amount of stock of that company. Or a comparable company.
That is, you got to be able to do that. Yeah.
But that'll also mean if I can't afford to do both, then I need to trim down what I just bought. Right?
Sure.
The Momentum Challenge 2026.
I didn't quite go 50-50. It was like, okay, if I dropped 600, then maybe I'm investing 400.
Okay. Because
that's a round number. $1,000 is a round number. Okay. I'm just saying.
All right.
But so I did. That works I bought too. Some more shares.
All right. I'm going to buy some Apple stock.
This is not a recommendation.
Yeah. Nah, it's just a little trick.
It's practical it's like application.
Like part of building wealth is like playing little tricks on yourself.
Sure.
Like I have a little thing I told you, I've never bought a pair of Jordans, and I am waiting until my bank account hits a certain level before I do it. And it's in the millions and millions and millions. Like, because I need something as a goal. Like I saw some dope Jordans the other day and I was like, man, I should just go buy those right now. Nope, can't afford it. I don't have the money.
I'm not at that balance yet. There was a commercial. No, it wasn't a commercial. It was one of the financial channels that we have on in the office. And they were talking about Hermes, the company.
Yeah.
And I heard the reporter say something about a $30,000 bag. And I'm sitting Birkin here and bag. I'm like, Hermes.
Oh, Hermes.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Whatever.
That's okay.
It was $30,000. It didn't matter. And I said to myself, how much money do I have? In order for me to be okay buying with my own money a $30,000 bag.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, maybe a billion. But in my mind, at the end of the day, it's a bag.
Yeah.
Like $30,000. I'm like, where am I carrying that bag?
Yeah. And Hermes owns Birkin.
They do. Okay. Yeah. So which I'm copying a Birkin.
So we were both right.
Yeah, we were both right. Yeah. Again. But I'm just saying, I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, like
I don't know if I could do it.
Carrying a $30,000 bag to me just feels like dangerous too.
That's what I'm saying. Like unless I'm a bag collector or it's going to be on the part of a collection and on display, like, and even then,
yeah.
Like why?
I was with one of my clients in Florida, and he's one of my wealthier clients, and you know him, and we go just walking around the mall, and he had me try on this really nice watch, and it was probably like, I don't know, $10,000 or something like that. Mm-hmm. And technically I could afford it, but I'm like, there's no way in hell I'm buying no $10,000 watch. Because every time I wear it, I think someone's about to rob me.
Correct.
I don't even like watches. I don't even wear a watch.
Yeah.
Like, why am I buying this?
You didn't chat about Apple Watch in the Apple store the other day? You have one
absolutely
already.
Not.
Yeah.
No, I told you my Apple Watch story. I got an Apple Watch for Christmas and
you,
I gave
you
that thing.
Like it.
I took it back in 3 days. Yeah.
Wow.
That thing was driving me crazy.
It's a lot. Yeah. I'm still adjusting.
Too many notifications, all that stuff. So we're talking about still broke. Advice for the high income earner on how to really build some wealth instead of just being proud to make a lot of money. So we'll go to break.
What you make is what you keep.
That's right. And it's about your money growing and bringing you more money.
That's right.
That's wealth. So we'll go to break, and when we come back, we'll keep the advice train rolling.
I'm Andrea Gray.
I'm Alan Boomer.
We are the Momentum Advisors.
Ooh, it's the pathway to freedom that's leading to the North Star.
So I've gotten a lot of questions recently about taxes. Are you getting a lot of tax questions given that it's April 15th and people getting that bad news?
A ton.
Yeah.
Questions, requests.
Mm-hmm.
Requests for assistance.
Yeah. And this is despite the fact that for the people who are getting refunds, refunds on average are up this year. Mm. A lot of our clients are not getting refunds, though, because the way their income is set up.
Yeah. So the first thing you want to do, especially if you're working, because we are talking about high earners, you want to max out that 401k.
Yeah.
The contribution limit for this year is $24,500. If you're in the 24% tax bracket, it saves you about $5,800 in taxes immediately.
That's federal.
Almost, that's close to $6,000 actually.
Yeah. And the money is for you.
And it's for you.
That's beautiful. I save taxes by giving myself money.
Yep.
And if you're over 50, you get an extra, what, $7,000 on top of that?
$7,500, the catch-up contribution.
And if you're over 60, it's an extra $11,500 on top of that. So that's $36,000 you can put away.
Catch-up on the catch-up.
Lord. A lot of our high-income earners, I will say, do, at least our client base, they mm-hmm. do max out. The next
one, though. Are they maxing out plus the catch-up?
So what's interesting, no.
Yes.
Because folks are used to just the regular max out. But as exactly. you get older, you start to get eligible for more stuff.
Right.
So one of our clients today, I was like, yo, you know, are you doing the true max out mm-hmm. or are you just maxing out for regular folks? You're seasoned now.
Right. Yeah. Sometimes I do find, practically speaking, it's harder for the newly 50s,
yeah.
50s because of just different reasons.
Yeah.
Those of us with children, we're paying for college and all yeah. of that. And so we're like, you know what? I just need to get through this.
Yeah.
And then I'll worry about a catch up.
But that's the thing. You're 50 now. Mm-hmm. Like, guess what? You get to save more for retirement. Are you going to actually do it?
Yep.
Remember to do it.
Yep.
The next one is the HSA. This is also a tax advantaged account. Just like your retirement account that you can fund and you don't pay any taxes on that portion, your healthcare account, your healthcare savings account can get funded.
I feel like this is the most overlooked and underutilized investment account.
For sure.
When we all know the big thing that's going to impact all of us in retirement is the unknown but increasing healthcare costs.
Mm-hmm. I plan on getting old. I don't know about y'all.
I'm already started, apparently.
Absolutely.
Says my knees and hips.
Yeah. Other things you can do to save on taxes.
Belly fat.
Charity. One of the big accounts that folks should have, I just helped this one client get one set up this week, a donor advised fund.
Absolutely.
This is a charitable account that you control. You can put the money in now, get the tax break now,
yep.
while your income is high now, and you can give the money away later. You can give the money away 30 years from now.
What's beautiful about it is you can see, when we talk about having your money make money,
mm-hmm.
This actually is an opportunity to grow your giving,
yeah,
without coming out of your pocket.
Word. Yeah, because it's an investment account.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So as it's growing, you have a bigger pool of money to give from.
Yeah.
Which can widen your reach.
Yeah, and it can also get your family aligned. You know, y'all can come together and figure out who to give money to.
Absolutely.
You can name it something cool like the Andrea Gray Charitable Fund.
Or something else. But yes, you can name your yeah. charitable giving fund.
Other tax things. Real estate, both as a homeowner and as an investor. So the young man I was talking to earlier, the young lawyer, he asked me, like, why would I buy a house? He lives in a major city. And I'm like, look, I'll tell you just the number one reason above all reasons. It's not taxes. I know we're in the tax part of the conversation. But I'm like, yo, it's inflation protection. It's like, what do you mean? I was like, yeah, when I bought my first house in my 20s, just like you, my mm-hmm. mortgage was only $1,400 per month. It was a struggle at that time.
Yeah.
20 years later, I'm living in that same house and I'm making quadruple what I was making back then. Sure. And my mortgage was still $1,400. I was like, yo, over 20 right. years, what do you think your rent's going to be in 20 years?
Right.
He was like, yo, I ain't think about that.
You're so smart, Mr. Boomer.
Mr. Boomer.
The 30-year-olds are calling us Mr. and Miss.
Yeah.
Just
I like uncle. I like unk.
You like unk?
I like unk and OG. I'm yeah. unk right now. I'm bordering on OG.
Yeah. Did we talk about, we talked about the wealth generations and we talked about the Gen X, you know, yeah. Alpha, Gen Z, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have age categories for auntie, unk, OG?
Let's research Nana. That and come back.
There'll be another show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you like auntie or you're not auntie
I'm,
yet?
I'm an auntie.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't think I'm an auntie.
Yeah.
I feel like auntie really goes with OG.
Yeah.
But I have, you know, my kids' friends.
Yeah. They call you
from
auntie.
A young, yeah, but it's not.
They probably
that
call
kind
you
auntie.
Mom. Do they call you
That's
mom?
More like
mommy,
auntie,
though? Do they call
like,
you mom?
Some call me mom. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's these new college ones started calling me aunties.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's more so because they look at the relationship to their parents as like yeah. brother and sisterly. So it's like
yeah.
familial auntie, not yeah. societal.
Listen,
auntie.
I'm sure you've been called worse.
Yes.
All right.
Andrea.
So that's Andrea. You don't like that? That's the one you don't
just
like?
It doesn't sound like me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't do it. Do I? I don't make a mistake and call you that, do I?
No.
Yeah. All right.
You should
good.
Call me Dre.
Yeah, that's you're just Dre now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. So real estate. So number one, inflation protection. But two, it's like a lot of tax savings. So now that they've raised the SALT cap, SALT is state and local taxes up to $40,000.
Yep.
You're writing off not just your home interest, but also your property taxes.
Mm-hmm.
Huge tax savings in that.
Absolutely.
And then taking it to the investment real estate world. You're depreciating the real estate, which means you're taking a portion of its cost and you're writing it off every year. And that's like one of those tax savings that literally is just on paper.
Mm-hmm.
It's a huge tax savings. It makes your real estate income, if you're getting it, be a lot less. Let's say you even attempt to rent it and you're not successful, you could still depreciate it.
Sounds like a good plan to
for
me.
A little bit, at yeah. least. Other ideas. We talked earlier about your 401k. If you are a business owner, or let's say you work at a company, but you do a little something on the side as an entrepreneur, you can create a SEP IRA and you can put away the lesser of $25,000 or $72,000 per year.
A little bump up from last year, but for self-employed individuals, that's basically 20% of net earnings.
Yeah.
Like that's a really.
And that's your money.
It is your money. It's also another underutilized opportunity.
Yeah.
Because folks don't know about it.
And then businesses in general are really big opportunities to write stuff off. Stuff that might also get you some personal utility, like your cell phone. If you're using your cell phone for business, you can write it off as a business expense if it is a small business that you have. Like, you might need to create a little business yep. just to have some of these write-offs for
yeah,
a while.
Seriously. But you got to do something. The
yeah.
business has to, after a while, you got to show some activity, some business activities. Yeah. And you have to have some business activities.
Yeah. Other advice. Walk to the beat of your own money drum. Like, avoid the social pressure. Like, stop giving a you-know-what about what people think about you. Stop
Seriously.
Caring about what you see other people have. Like, just stop worrying about that stuff.
Yeah, like, it's really about, I say this all the time. Like, I feel like everybody has a thing or maybe a couple of things that they're willing to pay for more than the average person because that thing is really, they're passionate about it or they're really into it or they have strong feelings about it.
Mm-hmm.
But like, and that's okay. Your thing doesn't have to be the other person's thing.
Yeah.
It's when we have too many of the things
yeah.
that we get into trouble. So
yeah.
I am learning as I mature. There are certain conveniences that are valuable to me.
Yeah.
So, like traveling, if I'm on a flight and it's more than a certain number of hours, I'm upgrading.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I'm going first class, but I'm going to pay for the extra leg room.
Yeah.
Or early boarding or something mm-hmm. like that. It depends on where I'm going and what reason I'm traveling. But if I'm going on a business trip and I'm going right into conduct business as soon as I land, I need to be a little more comfortable.
Yeah. Well, do you, boo?
I'm
not spending that. Like, as long as I'm not in the middle seat, like, I'll sit in the back of the plane.
Which sometimes costs more.
I don't value that the same. But neither of us is doing it to look good. Like, you're not buying Comfort Plus so people could look at you like you're balling.
Correct.
I'm not sitting in the back of the plane for that reason either. Like, I'm saying, like, do things that make you feel good or that give you some sort of utility, but don't do it to impress anybody.
Exactly.
Yeah. Other advice, don't borrow from your 401k. We looked at a study of folks who borrowed from their 401ks, and you end up with about 20 to 30% less in the end.
Yeah.
Like, that's just a fact. It sounds like this can't lose strategy. You're borrowing from yourself. You're paying yourself interest, all that.
But the opportunity costs and the real costs.
Yeah, it's because your loan payments are stopping you from making actual contributions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because like you borrowed the money because you had a financial problem. Do you think you can afford to pay double?
And really, even if you do it what you think is going to be one time, you still have to solve the problem.
Yeah.
Right? So if you have to reflect on how did I get here, and you have to fix that.
Word.
In order to avoid having that happen again.
Yeah. When I'm doing a financial profile on someone and I see 401k loans, I immediately know they've got money problems.
Yeah.
They do. Like, that's one of those things you do in the event of an emergency. Folks are probably doing it like willy-nilly. But I'm saying there's some kind of stress financially. Like, you had something come up that you clearly didn't plan on. And it could be something legit like college or home repair or something like that.
I already told you I did it when I pivoted to be an advisor.
Bruh, we've all done it.
When I pivoted to become an advisor, I went from my income went down like 60 to 70%.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, I'm making this choice. My family didn't.
Yeah.
So I borrowed from myself and I gave myself a payback plan.
I ain't mad at that.
It's the only time I've done it. And I don't plan on doing it.
Bro, we've all done it. Mm-hmm. I've done it multiple times. Mm-hmm. But it's a sign of stress. It's a sign of something going on that needs to be addressed.
Right.
And you addressed it and you're making buku bucks now, thank God. praise the Lord. Praise the Lord for that.
Won't he do it?
Other advice. We're trying to get you wealthy, y'all. Not just high income earners. We trying to stop you from still being broke out here.
I like this one. Did we talk about this one? Don't buy too much car. We kind of did.
Yeah, kind of did.
Don't buy a Bentley. Just
still don't
you
do it. And by the way, Bentleys drive horribly. By the way, one of my clients,
really?
Multiple of my
I've
clients have bought Bentleys.
I've only been a passenger.
Yeah, I've.
So I wouldn't know.
Yeah, I've multiple of my clients have Bentleys or have bought them and. I'm like, this thing drives horribly. Huh. It rides horribly.
I couldn't tell from the massage that I was getting in the back seat.
That's funny.
No, we have a family friend who has a transportation business and a security business. And once or twice, just coming from the airport, I got picked up in a
put you in a foreign.
He anyway, that's a whole nother story. But I didn't notice that it drove poorly. At all.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's a nice vehicle.
It's okay. I couldn't tell that it did not ride nicely.
Yeah.
But anyway, I don't need that.
Being wealthy, you got to have your money working for you. You need more of it working for you, right? So we talked about the 401k is one place to invest, but you got to be investing generally. Like Andrea gave up a really great tip a little while ago. Like if you're going to buy, you know, that Birkin bag, then go buy some Hermes stock. Hermes is probably, buy some LVMH if you're going to buy that Louis bag. Like, you got to be investing. You got to be looking for opportunities. You got to be thinking about what am I seeing in the world? Like, we got a war going on. There's oil prices skyrocketing. Like, what can I do to make some money off of these things?
Listen, we talked about this when we were talking to the babies a couple of years ago. It's like, you got to be doing one or two things of three or four things.
Yeah.
First of all, you got to be earning money.
Come on.
You got to be invested in the markets.
Well.
Or in real estate.
You better preach.
Or in businesses.
Come through.
Entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. So you've got to be doing at least one of those things for your money to make money.
Yeah.
If you can do two of those things, come even on. Better.
Mm-hmm.
The more you do, the more you're probably going to make.
Yeah. That's a fact.
Just saying, you have to do something. Like, storing up money in a savings account is not going to get there.
Yeah. And you got to be willing to take some risks.
You have to take some risks.
You got
to
take some, diversify, of course, make educated and, you know, appropriate risks. But mm-hmm. you got to take some risks as investors. And it's got to be more than one thing. Maybe it's a startup you want to fund. Maybe it's a small business in your community. Maybe it is some stocks or bonds or ETFs or mutual funds, or ETF is exchange-traded fund, by the way. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's just something to invest in. But, like, you got to be constantly, like, literally every month.
Yep.
401k is one thing, but like, what else are you buying that's an investment that's going to bring you a return, that's going to bring you more money? Got to be a constant thing. And then finally, this is my advice for all young people and old people.
All people.
All people. Make more money. I know it sounds like it's easier said than done. Sometimes it might require you to work a second job. Sometimes it requires you to do a good job at your current job so you can get a raise.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it requires you to do a little networking to be able to switch companies. Maybe it requires you to go back to school and get another degree. Maybe it requires you to switch into a field that you're more passionate about. Like, there's, you know how to do it.
I was going to say, you've got to know which one of these things is realistic for you,
yeah.
is feasible for you.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just be mediocre at your job or below average at your job and go ask for a raise.
Yeah.
Like.
Word. Where do that at?
Right, exactly. What is the output? Where's the product? Yeah. What did you improve?
Yeah, get a side hustle.
Mm-hmm.
Work at the mall on the weekend. I told Dre earlier how I was working mm-hmm, at Aerosols.
We're not talking no more about that. We're not doing it. I'm not going to.
I'm just
let
saying,
you
I worked at Aerosols and I worked at Merrill Lynch at the time.
Listen,
I worked two
I've
jobs.
I've known you for a long time. And in those early years, I've known you to have multiple jobs.
I had multiple jobs from 18 to about 28 years old.
Yeah.
And I still have multiple jobs because I'm out here investing in stuff and running
and to the
multiple businesses.
And to the point where your point that you made, like, don't worry about what people. Don't do things to impress other people. I was low-key like, why is Alan so hard up that he's working in the Jackson Hewitt tax office in the Walmart?
Man.
I didn't know you were in business school.
Yeah.
Or, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? But
yeah,
you just can't worry about what people think.
Yeah. I had to work two jobs staying at home because I couldn't afford it.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I had to pay rent.
Yeah.
And then as a young man, you know, I wanted to buy a house.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to buy an engagement ring.
Yeah.
Like, I wanted to have something.
Yeah.
And it wasn't enough coming in. I had free time. I was raised to be a worker. Like, it's just in my DNA at this point.
Sure.
And, like, I think sometimes folks feel like they deserve to just cruise and chill. And the money ain't stacking up well enough, though.
Yeah, I wasn't built like that.
Yeah. So I'm just saying, if you've got some free time on your hand and you've got money problems, like, if you, you know, have free time and no money problems, and this doesn't apply to you.
Right.
But there's somebody out there, you know, who's making good money, but they got money problems.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have wealth yet. They're not, their money's not making money yet. So make some more money, G.
Mm-hmm.
Never goes out of style. Never hurt anybody.
Never, ever.
So we've talked about still broke, how to fix that. And we're still financial advisors. If you would like to get some advice or really have someone take a look at your personal financial situation, look at your investment statements, give you some opinions and, you know, maybe run some calculations and let you know if you're doing okay financially, feel free to visit us on our website, momentum-advisors.com. Go to the contact page and you can schedule time with Andrea or myself.
30 minutes.
Complimentary. On the house.
Be respectful.
Charge it to the game. Keep listening.
It's our tithing principle. That's our tithe. It's kind of like our.
Yeah, we're giving back.
If you think
back.
About it, we're giving back.
We're giving back. And we love doing it.
Yeah.
You know, speaking for both of us, I think we can say that.
Okay.
We love it.
No, we do.
So keep listening. We'll be back next week.
I'm Andrea Gray.
I'm Alan Boomer.
We are the Momentum Advisors. Momentum.